Coming up next in This Week in Computer Hardware, Radeon's HD 7790 versus the GTX 650 Ti Boost. What's the best new bargain GPU? The Swiss have invented the future of Flash, Intel's Pixel Sync, NVIDIA's ridiculous and free performance bump. What's a reasonable price for a gaming laptop? And frame rating is here and so much more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 211, recorded March 28, 2013. The new bestest bargain GPU.
This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting, pay for what you use, does not require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit twitch.ting.com. That's twitch.ting.com. And by Lantronics, maker of the XPrint server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter coupon code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, the Twitch show that every week tries to bring you the most important, useful, and helpful news and answers to viewer questions about computer hardware, tablets, and occasionally, when we're feeling kind of edgy, cell phones. Back from his week of glorious golf in South Carolina, Mr. Ryan Schrouts.
Your definition of glory is different than mine.
Were you outside of your office?
Yes.
Were you running benchmarks?
No.
Were you getting your low country food on?
I did, actually, yeah. Okay. I
fail to see where there is not glory there.
You've been to Charleston, right? That's where
yes,
I was at.
Charleston.
Did you go to the Hyman's restaurant, the seafood restaurant?
Sadly was unable to attend Hyman's last time I was there.
Favorite part was the hush puppies, for anybody that cares to pay attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we don't get food like that in California.
Or in Kentucky. Food? Yeah.
No?
Not really. No. I live too close to Cincinnati. It's not country cooking, right? It's just cooking. So
just drive south a little bit.
Yeah.
Computer hardware, ladies and gentlemen, is what we usually talk about here. Should we start? You know what? We're going to start with you have released, and apparently at the Game Developers Conference this week, had extensive discussions with hardware developers, chip manufacturers, about frame rating. We've been informing you about the frame rating benchmarks that Ryan's been developing at PC Per. What is the word now that frame rating is here?
So frame rating is here. The word is that it doesn't look as good for AMD's Crossfire as they would like.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right.
Define so, not look as good.
Bad. So for the quick summary, the frame rating is rather than using a piece of software on your test system to capture performance data, we're actually sending the output of that system to a secondary system that has a very expensive capture card and very fast hardware, record the data with some colored overlays, and then we analyze that data in post-processing to say, okay, how well does it perform? And we're looking for a couple of things. We want frame rates to be smooth. We want them to be high. You always want your frame rates to be high because high frame rates mean you're getting potentially better animation and potentially better frame or input control, right? So the more often you see frames, the more often it's the game engine is reading what your mouse and keyboard are doing.
Okay.
But what's maybe not as obvious to many people is that you also want those frame rates to be consistent. You want the frame rates to be even in terms of their delivery. And what we found is that the most popular piece of software for performance testing is Fraps.
Mm-hmm.
And it records frame rates and frame times, but it records it at a much different point in the gaming pipeline than we would like. It happens very, very close. Basically, as soon as the game engine says, I'm done, and it sends off the frame to the operating system and DirectX and the driver and a whole bunch of other stuff that happens before it actually gets displayed, that's what Fraps measures. Our method measures what is on your screen. You don't get any more real world than that, right? We are physically recording what is sent to your monitor. And as it turns out, what Fraps sees, and yeah, that graph shows it perfectly. So where it says Fraps measures this, that is the present interval. And what we are measuring now is T display, which is right at the end point. and it shows different results.
So when we're looking at this graphics here, so we basically have the game is loaded into physical memory and the CPU and the cache on the CPU. If we pull that graphic back up again, essentially something happens in the game. That's where Fraps measures it. In real life, it goes from that happening in the game engine to the graphics card, the GPU driver, and then actually getting physically rendered out to memory, and then from the memory to the memory buffer. It's crazy, actually, how many steps are between something happening in the game and the frame actually showing up in your monitor.
Most people have zero idea of the complexity that happens. And there's really two, there's two important times. There's the game time, and then there's the frame time. And frame time is any time a frame is actually displayed on the screen for the gamer. And the game time is what the game engine thinks the time iterations are. And when those don't match, you have what's called a rate matching issue, which is a very, not popular, but a very long-standing mathematical problem. You have these two rates, they don't match. What's the best way to kind of merge them? That's how you get into like video interlacing and 442 and all that other different kind of stuff, pull down and things that you've probably seen options for that I have very little background on in coding and that kind of thing. So there's all kinds of problems, and basically we started down this path to better evaluate graphics performance and to try to prove that things were working correctly or prove that things were not working correctly. And the good news is for single GPU situations, it looks really good. The AMD cards, the Radeon 7000 series looks good, and the GTX 600 series look good. They both perform as you would expect. The variance between what Fraps sees and what we call frame rating sees is very minimal, almost nothing. And in those results, the article we posted focused on the 7970 and the GTX 680. The 7970 was the faster card in the games than the GTX 680. That's what we had come to expect.
Sure.
The problem is when you get into multi-GPU configurations, it's much more complicated. Now you're asking the software, the game engine, the compositing engine that AMD or NVIDIA is using, as well as any kind of hardware transfer of frames, to coordinate in such a way to have to maintain even frame distribution. And it doesn't happen very well on AMD's side.
Right.
With NVIDIA, if you look at, you go to the Battlefield 3 page and you look at frame times, you look at it as a scatter plot. And ideally, what you want is a perfectly thin line. That indicates that frame times are consistent throughout the period of 60 seconds that we're testing out at a time. And anytime you see the bands, actually scroll down a little bit, Burke, to that one right there. So if you look at that, the green line is a single GTX 680. The black line is a single 7970. And those are thin bands of color. And that indicates that the frame times are tighter together.
Mm-hmm.
It indicates that the frame times have very little variance and that your experience will likely be very smooth. And if you look at the blue line, that's a 680 SLI. And notice that it's thicker than the single GPU.
Got it.
It's lower. We're measuring frame time. So lower means better frame rates, more frequent frames being displayed. But wider means that there's a little bit more variance. So you're going to see, instead of it going, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10 in terms of millisecond frames, you might get 10, 8, 12, 10, 8, 12, 12, 12, 10, 8, 12, something like that, right? And if you look at the orange one on that graph, that is crossfire. That is two 7970s running together. And that band is very wide in many cases. And that causes a big problem with stutter. It causes a bigger problem with perceived frame rate, because those frames that are basically at the bottom of that graph that are almost 0 milliseconds show on the screen for a handful of scan lines at a time, meaning you are never actually perceiving that frame. Can still benefit you in terms of input latency, but you'll never actually see that frame. So if you go back to that and go up one more graph, I'm sorry, Burke, and show this observed FPS, which is a metric that we kind of created around this, it will show you what we think the actual frame rate of the game looks like. And yeah, one so that's Fraps. And if you go down, watch where the orange line moves. If we scroll down to the next, there we go. The observed frame rate. And notice that the orange line has now come down quite considerably because we're taking away those what we call runt frames and that kind of stuff. And this happens on Battlefield 3, happens on Crysis 3, happens on Sleeping Dogs, does not happen on Dirt 3, does not happen on Skyrim, does not happen on Far Cry 3. So there's some interesting things going on, and I think it comes into play where if the CPU is a bottleneck on the game, the GPU is pacing itself out, the two GPUs are pacing themselves out. when the GPU is a bottleneck, there's something else going on. NVIDIA is doing some hardware-based frame metering that AMD is not doing, and the result is all that data that we're seeing. And it's you mentioned that we had lots of conversations with people about it, right? We talked with NVIDIA right. about what we saw, and we talked with AMD about what we saw, and AMD's not happy about it, obviously, especially considering at GDC they kind of previewed their new dual GPU graphics card, which will fall directly into this into this pitfall. And so there's still a lot of research to do, you know, to measure specific stuttering, to measure mm-hmm. input latency and all this other kind of stuff. But it so far the feedback has been surprisingly good on the article. I don't want to say surprisingly, but surprisingly unanimously good. Even though people it's
while
a huge
you're
article,
expected to be publicly savaged, mocked, and right. pilloried for when, walking away from all that is glorious in frame rates.
When you get your story posted to 4chan and you don't get called derogatory terms almost immediately,
that's probably
a pretty good sign.
Or the sign that the end times are here.
We should go home to your families immediately. 4chan was nice. The end times are coming.
They were like, hey, this is actually really interesting stuff. This is cool. This is good information. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's a good sign.
Yeah, or a terrifying sign.
One or the other.
It's awesome, though. I
don't know. We only showed documentation or results from the 7970 and the GTX 680.
Uh-huh.
We're going to release more as the days go on. Like tomorrow, on Friday, we're going to release the GTX Titan versus the GTX 690 mm-hmm. versus the HD 7990 emulated through two 7970s. And I think you'll find that, as a little preview, the GTX Titan looks different. It looks better than it does in normal testing because the Titan is a single GPU, it does not have these frame stuttering, frame time variance issues.
Right.
So even though the average frame rate might be lower than the 690, its stutter levels are significantly lower. And it paints a totally different picture of multi-GPU in general, not just for AMD, but also NVIDIA. But AMD just happens to look quite a bit worse.
Hopefully AMD will work on that.
They're trying. I mean, that you know, I had one meeting with them yesterday and one more this morning, and they basically said, we're working on a fix, but it's months away.
Right.
It's a complete rework of what their driver does for multi-GPU. Because right now, essentially from what I understand, their multi-GPU solution is they take a very hands-off approach. They just kind of pass the data to the GPUs and let them kind of recompile back into what they need to recompile and let it go. Whereas NVIDIA kind of takes a more hand-holding approach to things. It says, okay, here's where you get a frame. Okay, now I get them back. What makes the most sense to display them based on a whole lot of factors and go with that. And, you know, to NVIDIA's credit, this is an ace in the hole that they've had for a long time since before the G80 days, and they never brought it up because this process of testing it wasn't around yet. And right. Nobody really knew if it worked. They just assumed it worked.
That's a big deal.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah.
Suddenly I saw OMG Chad, and I thought to myself, what is going on?
Be afraid.
Hey, bringing motion into the podcast. This is exciting stuff, ladies and gentlemen. You get off Skype and life gets exciting. Some of you may be fans of certain video games involving such characters as Lara Croft or perhaps the BioShock Infinite. If you are perhaps running NVIDIA cards, I hope you updated your drivers. We've told you in the past, update your drivers, check your drivers to make sure they're updated. On the NVIDIA blog, basically like GeForce 3.14.22 Wickel drivers ready for BioShock Infinite. And this is pretty obscene. The new driver, quote, featuring performance optimizations of up to 41% in BioShock Infinite and 71% in Tomb Raider, they had some hair issues. In Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
So if you're looking to see Lara Croft's hair rendered in its full glory, you might be running AMD. But it's pretty crazy. GeForce GTX systems, single GPU and SLI performance improvements of up to 30% in Civilization 5, 22% in Sniper Elite V2, 12% in Sleeping Dogs, SLI profiles from Dungeons & Dragons, Neverwinter, Resident Evil 6, Sniper Elite, Nazi Zombie Army, blah, 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 blah. Update your driver. NVIDIA, AMD, update your drivers, kids, because
what's interesting about this is AMD has done a very good job recently getting like the big games right. as their kind of pack-ins, Tomb Raider, Far Cry 3, Crysis 3, right. BioShock Infinite. Those were all AMD titles, essentially, AMD marketing-based titles. And NVIDIA had a big issue with Tomb Raider when it came out, where there were some performance issues, and they basically said that the developer withheld the latest version of the game before release. But you look at BioShock, that day-of-release driver shows a 40% improvement over the previous version of the driver. Right. You know, it takes a lot of work to do that. And it takes a lot of dedication to, even though it's your competitor's title,
right,
to spend the time and make sure that it works correctly for all the GeForce owners and that kind of stuff.
AMD or NVIDIA, nobody running a GPU company wants to have their neighbor be like, "Hey, Bob, my son saw his game on another person's machine with the other brand of card and was terribly disappointed."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to be that guy with the car that runs like crap. Yeah, that would be bad, too.
Right, yeah.
What is not bad, there is a new champion at the $149 level. If you are like, I thought onboard graphics would be okay, but then I played a video game and they weren't okay anymore, or you just don't have $300 for a GPU. AMD's Radeon HD 7790. Pretty cool. Pretty low cost, and pretty much the card to buy at $150. Or are you going to argue with me about that?
The 7790 or the Ti Boost?
So the 7790.
Okay, so here's what happened. These two cards came out within a few days of each other.
Okay.
The 7790 came out first.
Okay.
The problem for that is the GTX 650 Ti Boost came out after that.
And I haven't seen the benchmarks for that.
It's a better
yet.
Card.
Oh, no! At the $149 price point?
Well, it's about $159.
Okay.
So it's like 10 or 15 bucks more. And it was really a downer because we reviewed the 7790 and it's like, okay, it's a pretty good card. What's more interesting about the 7790 is that it's a completely new ASIC. It's a completely new chip.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same architecture, but it is a new chip. They have implemented some more power savings technology. It's a little bit more efficient.
Okay.
But it doesn't do anything significantly differently than the 7770 did or the 7850 did. It just happens to sit right between that in terms of specifications and pricing and all that kind of stuff. And it did well in its pricing stack. But as these things often happen, they were released in pairs. And the 650 Ti Boost turned out to be a better card overall.
Like 10% better, 100% better, 20%
better? Not 100%. I'd say it's probably closer to 20 or 25%. Okay. And what's interesting, if you look at NVIDIA stack prior to that release, you had the 650 Ti and you had the 660.
Right.
There was nothing between them. And it went from $230 to $140. That's a pretty big gap in that price range.
Sure.
And the 650 Ti was a bad card. It really was. It was slow. They had taken too many features away, too much performance away from the GPU. The 650 Ti Boost is much, much closer to 660 than a 650 Ti. They essentially took the 660, turned off one SMX, one mm-hmm. unit of cluster of processors, and left everything the same. The original 650 Ti didn't support SLI, didn't support GPU boost. The new one has SLI, has GPU boost.
Hmm.
The first version had 128-bit memory bus. This one has 192-bit memory bus, and it has 2 gigs of memory instead of 1 gig. It has like almost twice the total memory bandwidth,
uh-huh.
and on low-end cards, that makes a really big difference.
Right.
So the 650 Ti actually competes very favorably with the HD 7850, pretty much blows by the 7790.
Got it.
It's still the case where prices of cards in this, or the cards in this price range, are very squished together. It gets very confusing to kind of talk about them in any kind of reliability because every week the price could change.
Sure.
A rebate of $15 or $20 on a $120 or $150 card
is a big deal.
Makes a big deal. So it's I try to consider it more on here's the MSRPs, your mileage is going to vary
mm-hmm.
on that kind of stuff. I would say after all this, the 650 Ti Boost is probably the best card under $200
mm-hmm.
right now, which I know is very popular price segment that we get questions in and that kind of stuff. AMD with the 7850 and the 7790, you get BioShock Infinite for free.
Okay.
With NVIDIA's cards, you get $75 in credit for some free-to-play games like PlanetSide 2, World of Tanks, and Hawken, which are good games.
Right.
It's just a matter of maybe what your preference is.
I'm just laughing because I pulled up on Amazon.com, GTX 650 Ti, and I'm like, why is it so expensive? I'm like, okay, so GTX 660 superclocked, $204. GTX 650 Ti boost superclocked from EVGA, $180.
Right. That's the non-reference overclocked model. So, I mean, it's, yeah.
Would you get, at that point, would you get to the 660 or the 650 Ti?
What was the
boost?
Difference again?
$20, $24, $25.
Yeah, you might. Yeah. I mean, it's always, I say that a lot, though. That's my mentality when we do this show pretty much every time is, just spend $20 more. But then you can always do that. You can always spend right. $20 more.
Well, in that case, I mean, in this case, it's like, well, the 650 Ti boost to the 660, are we talking about a 10% performance increase at the 660 or a 20%?
It's probably closer to 10.
10.
Yeah.
Eh.
Yeah.
Eh.
If you look at our review of the boost, the 650 Ti boost card, we have the 660, the Ti boost, the 650 Ti, and then we have the 7850 and the 7790 all kind of combined. So sure. You can kind of see where they fall.
I was surprised at how close together they were all in terms of the wattage consumed. Like they were all like 70 watts at idle.
Yep.
Like across the board, 70 watts at idle, and then somewhere between like 190 and 240 watts.
Well, the 650 Ti boost is almost the exact same GPU as the 660. So I think their TDPs are only like 5 watts different or something uh-huh. like that. But the 7790 and the original 650 Ti boost, or I'm sorry, the original 650 Ti was a totally different GPU.
Sure.
And it was way lower power consumption, but it was also way lower performance.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's funny. Like Ti boost, 243 watts at full power. HD 7790, 199 watts. Radeon HD 7850, 231 watts.
Right.
GTX 650 Ti, 193 watts.
So those are full systems. So you got to just kind of compare right. what the variances are. But I mean, look at the difference between the 650 Ti and the 650 Ti boost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty big. And
like 50 watts.
And nobody's breaking the laws of physics. So
why not?
Better, more power almost always means more performance, especially if you're looking at the same architecture. Right. If you're spending more power and you're not getting more performance, something is broke.
Your design is inefficient.
Right. Yeah. And there are cases where that happens, where the long tail of performance trails off. But
speaking of the long tail of performance, what's going on with the ARM Mali graphics? Who got a chance to interview them, and what was the word on
so
that?
Josh got to interview one of the leads of the Mali graphics architecture, and this is kind of more of a beginning series for us to learn mm-hmm. about. We want to have as much information about the mobile side of graphics and computing as we currently have on the desktop side. I feel like we have a very good understanding of what goes on the desktop side.
I think you do.
And we want to be able to do that as well. So this is kind of, for us, an introduction. And we thought, this is actually really cool information. There's no point in not sharing this with our readers, that I think a lot of people that read PCPro.com and watch Twitch and listen to us know a lot about discrete graphics, know a lot about desktop graphics and notebook graphics, I'll
sure.
call them. But maybe don't know anything about SoCs and how the graphics interplay with that and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good introductory kind of overview of what ARM does, what Mali is, what parts use it, you know, how it maybe compares to stuff like Tegra and Snapdragon mm-hmm. and all that kind of deal. So,
because we all know that the tablets and the phones are taking over our mobile lifestyle.
They are.
Any big surprises in that interview?
Nothing dramatic. You know, they're not making any kind of new announcements mm-hmm. or anything like that. It was more of an informational piece for, again, what I think we're going to be doing a lot more of kind of going forward, is let's make sure everybody has the right base of knowledge before we start talking more about it.
Now that PC Pro has managed to upset the entire graphics community with its new benchmarks, it's moving on to upset the entire mobile processor community.
Whatever you got to do.
Hey, man. I said that with love and affection. I also have love and affection for our sponsor, Ting, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you've heard about Ting. If you haven't, let me tell you a little bit. It is a no BS mobile service, the MNVO. They resell Sprint service, but they do some really, really interesting stuff. It's the nationwide Sprint network that's sold to you by Ting. And, you know, if you're paying attention to a certain major network that talked about their no BS, their new no BS system these days, they were kind of following Ting's examples. No contract, no early termination fees, no surprises, no bogus BS in your phone bill. And it's really exciting. So what Ting does is they resell the Sprint network. I mentioned that. You buy your hardware. So you own your hardware. I bought my modem, my wireless modem, my portable hotspot for $50. And for $6 a month, I get 100 megabytes, I think, for $6 a month. Maybe $9 a month for 100 megabytes. If I don't use my modem that month, that much or at all in a month, I pay like $9. If I use it a whole lot, I pay a little bit more because they have sort of, you know, extra small, medium, large, extra large pricing plans. And the idea is that you pay the minimum. If I'm signed up for extra large, but I use a small amount of data, they roll over the extra data they didn't use. They give me credit for that. It's pretty cool. You know, you don't use the service, you get credit for it. So it actually is to your advantage to choose like the extra small plan, the NADA plan or the small plan. And then if you don't use that 100 megabytes, if you don't use that 100 text messages, you know, you don't get charged a bunch of extra. It's a pretty clever system, and it's pretty clever because it's designed to work for you. They have this amazing website that makes it easy to track on who's using what. You can have multiple phones on a single account. And each device you add is just $6. So if one of your kids who barely talks on the phone but uses a ton of text messages, there's nothing worse than signing up and like, you know, we signed up for a family plan, and one of the people in our family never talks on the phone, but they constantly use the text message. So I feel like the $35 or $50 we're paying for their cell phone service is completely wasted. So the idea is that, you know, you buy your hardware, you get a decent deal. Ting answers the phone, and they did. When I wanted to figure out if I could attach a particular Sprint device to Ting, I called up the phone. They looked it up. They told me, sadly, they were not currently able to bring that device to Ting, but they may in the future. And then I got a nice emailed summary. So it's weird. That was one of the things that major carrier was talking about this week, that Ting's already there. The idea that you're paying them and maybe they should give you decent service.
Weird.
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 Unsettling. Inexpensive. Which is why you should probably check out twitch.ting.com, save $25 on your first Ting device, and get on board a less painful, less expensive, less irritating, more awesome phone service. We want to thank Ting for sponsoring this edition of Twitch. And if you would like a fat little discount, do us a favor, go to twitch.ting.com, save $25 on your first Ting device, buy a phone, buy a modem, get your mobile computing on for less money. And by the way, they do have their Bring Your Own Device, the BYOD program is in place, and you can learn more about that at ting.com.
That's good.
Just do us a favor. Sign up at twitch.ting.com.
Definitely.
If you decide to join, you'll get a discount, we'll get some credit, and we'll get to keep bringing the show.
We get to keep making the show, which hopefully they want us to do.
That would be nice.
Yeah, well,
we sponsored this show in the hopes that it would go off the air.
Viewers.
Okay. I was confused, Ryan. I get that way.
It happens.
We should take a moment here. It was funny. You are in town for the Gaming Developers Conference, the GDC.
Sure, why not?
I found myself dragging around a 300-pound console built by my partners in crime, Anthony Carboni and Michael Hand. They basically built this open-source operating system arcade for a party that went on last night. So there I am, like, in a nightclub at 10 o'clock in the morning, picking up literally carrying a 300-pound machine downstairs with the help of another person who worked at the club, and thinking to myself, only at the Game Developers Conference, do I get to clean up after somebody else's party like I'm in a frat house, which was just odd. Not odd. Game Developers Conference is mostly about making games. In your
developing
case,
games,
yeah,
you might say.
Meeting the hardware vendors who make the hardware that accelerate the pixels to make the pretty pictures and make the games worth playing.
Right. So the Game Developers Conference used to be strictly about game coders and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it has expanded more. Now you see some hardware vendors out there. Intel was here, AMD was here, NVIDIA was here. And we got to sit down and see a lot of what they were showing. Not a lot of totally new, earth-shattering news. AMD did have a press conference on Tuesday night. Right, so they announced Sky Graphics, which is Sky Radeon or Radeon Sky. I don't remember which one it was. So it's their answer. It's their solution for cloud gaming. Right, so they basically are saying, if you're going to build a cloud gaming system,
okay,
we believe the Radeon ecosystem is the best. Now we have Radeon-based cards for you to use in those servers.
Okay.
There's nothing wildly new about the hardware. It's the same ASIC. It's the same GPU. They got the same memory systems and all that kind of stuff.
Is it all about middleware? I love saying middleware whenever I can. It makes me feel like
it is unfortunately all about middleware. So if you look at what NVIDIA's stance is and what AMD's stance is, the NVIDIA one is, grid, and they're going to make the hardware, they make the server, they make the rack mount servers, and they're going to make the software infrastructure to interface between a service provider and, right. And a gamer. Right? They think they can optimize the entire pathway. AMD, as they usually do, attempts to take what they call a more open approach. Right? Let's get a bunch of our partners involved. So they're saying, if you're going to build servers, we have all these Radeon cards. If you're going to make software to stream games, we will help you with that. Here's four partners that are looking at it. CNOW, OTOY, those kind of guys. But they're much less involved in creating the entire package.
Right.
And there's positives and negatives to that. I think the idea of an open system makes sense. It makes people feel better about it. But it also means longer outlook for integration.
NVIDIA's like, we're gonna own a turnkey solution that you can start now.
Correct.
All you have to do is give us all the money. And AMD's like, we want to sell GPUs, and maybe some of the intellectual property we'll charge you for that'll allow you to use those to accelerate your weird little offline games.
Yeah.
Since you aren't clever enough to build a big computer and put it in everybody's house and use our awesome freaking cards in it. Right. So, and we'll let you figure out most of the problems, and here are our partners that'll help you figure out that problem. Yeah. I mean, it's basically money versus development cycle. Is that kind of the more money, shorter development cycle, less money, longer development cycle? Am I oversimplifying it?
Maybe a little. I mean, I think both companies want to make money.
Yes, I would agree.
But I think NVIDIA is more willing to put their own marketing side behind it, their own software side behind it. AMD is looking at it, and you know, as a company financially, they don't have a whole lot of flexibility to make huge investments in new markets right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they just want to make sure they're not losing out. Right. If NVIDIA has its cloud technology for a year and AMD has nothing, not only is it going to look bad and they'll probably lose some sales, it's going to look bad to investors and that kind of thing in the short range as well. So for NVIDIA Grid and AMD Sky, it's kind of like, great, there's no real usage in America yet. Like there's no North American partners that are reselling the service. They're all demos that you see in closed environments and all that kind of stuff. So it's and I don't think for the majority of people that watch this show, cloud gaming is going to overtake what you do with your PC or your console or anything like that anytime soon. So
speaking of which, I think Ouya's launch party is tonight. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, that's right. That is. Yeah.
On a completely different note. One other big announcement from GDC on the hardware side of things. Intel's Pixel Sync and Instant Access.
So, how to say this? Haswell's coming out.
Right.
And it will have a new generation of their Intel HD graphics on it. Intel's big stigma on the graphics side has always been they don't update their drivers enough. They don't work with game partners enough. They don't necessarily... you know, have the best reputation for having games run out of the box and that kind of thing. So they're trying to address that. These two features are extensions to the DirectX 11 stack that will do unique things. Pixel Sync, let's start with Instant Access because that's easier to understand. Instant Access will allow the CPU to read GPU memory and vice versa.
Oh, interesting.
Right, so that's good. That's what AMD has been trying to do with heterogeneous computing. And it will hopefully improve things in terms of, you know, how performance works that way. Pixel Sync is more complex, and I guess I'll just kind of say what it attempts to do is reorder operations so that transparencies are less impactful on performance.
Right.
And it's something that several major game developers have been asking for a long time. And it's not currently in DX11 or 11.1, so they said, well, we'll make something that is more efficient for our particular architecture.
Okay.
Now, it will depend on people actually implementing support for both of these. And Intel has some say in the matter because they're Intel. And they have a huge market share.
Right.
But it's almost like cheating, right? Because you can't buy a computer today that's an Intel-based system that doesn't have one of their GPUs in it.
Ha, ha, ha.
Even if your laptop has a discrete GPU or your desktop has a discrete GPU, it also has an Intel GPU in it. 99.9% of the time. So, you know, they were quoting Steam hardware survey results and that kind of stuff, and that's a little bit taking advantage of the situation. But, you know, they're saying again that they want to be involved in the gaming market, that they want to prove that they're going to release drivers, they want to show that they're going to support these software developers. And
I don't want to sound like Nike, just do it.
Yeah, I would like for them to just actually live up to it for like a year. All I'm asking for is a year.
Okay.
Right? So when,
it's not like
when
they don't have the money.
Exactly. When Sandy Bridge released, they talked about the same thing, and they showed a couple of games, and then we never heard from them again. Right? Now, oh, here comes another architecture. We've got a new faster graphics option. And so they showed off Rome Total War 2, and they showed off Grid 2. And they're like, look, we're supporting these software partners.
Both of them.
And they love us because we had them come to our press conference and say that. And it's like, okay, that's great. What about Far Cry 3? Can I play BioShock Infinite on it?
What about BioShock Infinite?
Like,
what about Skyrim?
You know, they released 7 major driver revisions since Sandy Bridge came out. Not Ivy Bridge, Sandy Bridge.
How long ago was that?
3 years.
And what? NVIDIA's done 7 releases in the last 4 months?
Probably, yeah. AMD's and AMD, too. Similar?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it takes more than just saying it, and they have the resources to do it. I honestly don't know what their problem is. I don't know why some executive who maybe – there's a new guy there named Richard Huddy who came from the AMD graphics side.
Sure.
And maybe he'll sit down and say – that exact thing. Just do it. Stop talking about doing it and actually spend the time to do it. And tell people that you're doing it. If you're right. Fixing game performance and drivers, go tell people about it. How many times have people ever updated the graphics on their integrated graphics?
Probably not enough.
Probably never. Right? Like, yeah. I mean, I've had multiple Lenovo ThinkPads with integrated graphics, and never once have I ever updated a driver.
Are you suggesting that Intel's marketing campaigns around gaming and integrated graphics are all a lie so that the common computer buyers will think they might someday be able to play a game on their notebook even though they really won't?
I just feel like there's some manager inside Intel that really wants this to happen, but for years and years and years, his boss has been like, that's a good idea. And then he's like, that's not making us any money. Stop.
It could make you money. Right? Well, it would also make you money if
you're integrated
graphics.
The problem is it's not
going to
make any money because Intel's going to win by default. That's what they think.
Ah.
Right? So why invest money if you don't have to, I guess, would be their thinking from a business standpoint.
So everybody should stop buying Intel until Intel agrees to do better gaming graphics on CPUs we know aren't really good for gaming.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that.
Flash flood.
A Swiss government research lab has reinvented flash memory using graphene and molybdenite. Molybdenite?
You got me.
I'm sure there's a silent letter in there somewhere. In a way that should be faster, scale smaller, use less energy, and yet be more flexible than boring old NAND. That the article is there a flash flood coming? Jeremy Hellstrom wrote it up for PCPer.com. It's pretty interesting. This idea, it's like, so, you know, over the past few years, we've seen the actual production of phase change memory from Micron. There are no benchmarks yet. HP has done memristors, IBM Spintronic racetrack memory. Basically, the entire industry is looking for a replacement for NAND memory. Quote, there is no question we need a new type of flash, preferably non-volatile, as it is likely there will be a limit on effective speed and density reached with traditional NAND. Non-volatile, of course, means when you turn the memory, when you stop applying power to the memory, that the memory will retain its state, its information, so that you don't lose everything that's stored in memory when the power goes off. You know, it's going to, this is another great line. Props to Jeremy for this one. It is also true that the path to our current flash technology is littered with the carcasses of failed technology standards, whether Rambus is willing to admit it or not. Mm. So the Register was told that by layering MOS-2 between layers of graphene, they got a NAND cell smaller than traditional cells. No report of the speed for that cells, but the idea is that supposedly one of the multiple technologies competing will come up with the future of memory, of flash memory. So yeah, MOS2, Molybdenum, somebody in the chat room just start mocking me right now.
Oh, they've been doing it. You've been reading those, so I just left
it. Probably good. By the way, speaking of memory, why has RAM doubled in price in the last 4 months? Do we have an answer for that?
I got no idea.
I'll tell you what, we are going to address some questions from the chat room that we can actually answer right after we take a moment to thank this
sponsor.
Maybe
we can answer.
I think we picked ones we can answer.
Oh, good idea then. this episode is also brought to us not only from our friends at Ting, but also by our friends at this company. It says it's only an X, but it's actually Lantronix. They are the makers of the XPrint server. Now, the XPrint server is, as I open up this box, a tiny device that has a lot of great features. So if you've ever wanted to print from your iPad, your iPhone, your iPod Touch, if there are other iDevices, probably those two, this is the device you need. So if you don't have an AirPrint enabled printer, you might have noticed you have to do other things like download applications. You have to download some extra software. You have to email the files to yourself and then print them from your regular machine. Some annoying things like that. This kind of solves all of that. So this will let you use any printer that you already own, USB or network, and print straight from it. So you can print directly from the iOS native menu. No apps to buy, no software to load. It's compatible with 4,000, at least 4,000 top brand printers. It's easy to use, automatic setup. I mean, the setup on this is really easy. So if you look at the device, it's fairly light. It's fairly, there's not a whole lot to it. But if you look at the connections, there are three connections. There is a USB connection. There's a network connection. And there's a power connection. And literally, if you have a network-based printer, you plug in your Ethernet cable and you plug in your power cable. And then this light, this X right here, oops, as I try not to cover it up, will illuminate. It will flash for about 30 seconds. And when it stops flashing, it has found your printers and configured them. Now, all you do is you turn on your iPhone, your iPad, go to something that you want to print, go into the native iOS menu that will say print to AirPrint, and then you select a printer on the network. I mean, we got one of these in our office at home and literally plugged it in. It found the two printers, and we could print to either of them immediately. One XPrint server supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited iOS devices. It allows your USB printers to be shared on the network as well. So if you have a USB printer, you can plug it in here. I think it'll support multiple through a hub as well, or definitely will. And when you plug it in here, not only can your iOS device print to it directly, but you can also print to it from any other computer, like, or you just you use it as if it were hooked up to a network print server. It's great for your home. It's great for the office. It even works with large multifunction printers as well, which is a plus. The Home Edition, thank you, is $99 is all. It supports 8 USB and 2 network printers. And then for $199, you can get the Office Edition, which supports 8 USB and unlimited network printers and includes many network admin features like Active Directory support. Go to xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. We've got a special offer for you, of course. That's what we do here for you guys. If you use the code TWIT, T-W-I-T, you'll receive free shipping on your order. So you can get the home version for $99 or the office edition for $199. That's xprintserver.com/twit. And at checkout, use coupon code TWIT for free shipping on the order. We thank Lantronix for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware and the entire TWIT network.
Woo-hoo. So is Intel Haswell getting DDR4 memory?
No.
Okay.
See, I like this. Rapid fire. I can do this. I can't say for sure that it won't ever, but all the details that have come out have been that it's going to be DDR3.
Because that was one of the speculation in the chat room as well. Haswell's getting DDR4 memory, so the memory manufacturers have stopped manufacturing DDR3, which is why there's been a reduction in the supply and therefore an increase in price.
I would have heard more about that by now, right, and I would have been able to talk about it. I don't think it's going to happen. Maybe Ivy Bridge E will?
Maybe?
I doubt it, though.
Like, hold my breath.
Yeah.
DDR5 going into GPUs. Actually, I'm kind of curious. You know, I was thinking, like, you know, Windows 8, people buying more memory, but memory prices have gone up a bit.
It's possible that maybe memory vendors got tired of the cheap prices and just stopped ordering more from Korea and Japan and Taiwan, and as will happen, prices will kind of go up. It's still not expensive, though, yeah. I would guess.
Well, I think there may be people in the chat room who haven't been buying computers for 10 years and don't remember the glorious days of $1,000 memory bills.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Memory used to be one of the most expensive components in your system if you wanted a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad those days are gone. You know, you mentioned DDR5, and I want to mention this. It's completely has nothing to do with this, but the PlayStation 4 announced with the hardware spec, and one of the things was a shared GDDR5 memory bus. And apparently... I don't know, because I think I may have misspoke this when we talked about it. The CPU and the GPU will use the same GDDR5 memory controller. It's
just like a netbook.
Which essentially means that the CPU is able to utilize a GPU-based memory controller, which is actually interesting because I thought that the memory controller was much more tightly coupled to the CPU itself. Really? And in this case, you know, AMD is able to design very custom stuff for Sony or Microsoft, whoever they're making APUs for. And it's pretty interesting that way.
It has
nothing to do with anything we were talking about.
Now I want to be like, okay, so if you have an APU and the system memory and the
So the GPU and the system memory are one bank.
That's what I thought. That part I got.
And the APU is on a single piece of silicon with the CPU and GPU on it. And there's one memory controller.
For both.
Right. And on current PCs, that is a DDR3 memory controller.
But on the PS4, it will be
DDR5.
So that'll be faster memory.
Significantly faster. Because one of the biggest bottleneck for APUs is memory bandwidth. Because DDR3 is significantly slower than DDR5.
Right.
Significantly lower bandwidth. And if they're able to run... I tried to ask them about this and they wouldn't answer because they're like, that's all up to Sony to decide when they want to talk about it, essentially. Was how is CPU performance affected by the move from DDR3 to DDR5 memory?
Hopefully it goes up.
Well, the issue with DDR5 is it's every time you go up in a DDR class, essentially, you are increasing latency, but also increasing bandwidth. And CPUs are much more sensitive to latency than they are bandwidth. Huh. And GPUs are much more sensitive to bandwidth than they are latency. So I'm curious to see what the balance is going to end up being on that, if that turns out to be the case.
And you're also assuming a balance and not just a random decision.
Yeah, I am.
Being obnoxious. Niche says, do you guys think Haswell processors will increase performance at least 20% over Ivy, or is Intel going only for lower power consumption? I don't think Intel's only going for lower power consumption, but I think you're looking at roughly 7% improvement, 10% improvement.
On the CPU side, yeah.
With a modest power reduction?
There will be some power reduction. I don't really know. It's using the same process tech, so I don't think it'll be dramatic.
Right.
But maybe there's more different. There are more unique power states in Haswell than there were in Ivy Bridge or Sandy Bridge, which means connected standby can now be run on a Haswell processor. So if your laptop goes into standby, mm-hmm. now you know how your phone is in standby. It can get messages. It can get push notifications. Because if your laptops are going to be able to do that. Whereas they are not, Ivy Bridge doesn't support that technology. So you'll save battery life that way. And with the different power states, you'll be able to save some battery life. There will be, on certain SKUs, there will be significant performance improvements on the GPU side.
Right.
50% or more. But on the CPU side, I don't expect it to be more than unless they increase clocks, you know, IPC, the instructions per clock, your performance clock for clock, will maybe be a handful of percent more.
A handful of percent.
God, man, I'm doing really well with the language today.
You and
more
me
better.
With the English.
Yeah.
Sadly, it's both primary language we speak. The Chewmeister, what is a reasonable price for a gaming laptop? Somewhere in between $800 and $4,000. Really depends on A, how much performance you want, and B, how much money you're willing to pay for it. Because some people are quite happy playing Bejeweled on a $500 laptop. That is their gaming laptop. I kid.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's true.
Some people $1,500, $2,000.
I'd say that's pretty typical. You can get really if you go to the Alienware M17X with dual GPUs and dual hard drives. I mean, you can spend $3,000 or $4,000 easy.
People do,
and they do. That's why they still make those. But you know, I'm trying to think. There was an MSI machine that came out. It's older now. It's probably not around. But it was like a $900 machine that they sold at Best Buy. It was really relatively good for gaming performance.
Mm-hmm.
I think now, you know, one that's kind of come up in conversation many times is the Lenovo Y400 or the Y500.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know, larger screen type. Here's a GTX or a GT660M or something like that.
Right.
So I would still actually look at MSI laptops. They're not very popular in the U.S.
Right.
Yet. There's
that
not
doesn't
a whole
mean
lot
they're bad.
No.
Just means they're not popular.
No.
They're all being built by the same companies in China.
It costs a lot more money to sell your machine at Best Buy than it does to sell it at Newegg or Amazon. And MSI has done a good job of balancing cost and performance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking for a machine that will have like the latest GPU, MSI is amongst the first to have it. So like if you want a mobile GT X680M, they will have one. you know, that kind of stuff.
It's funny. I'm looking at the Alienware website, you know, Dell.com/US/P/Alienware, and it's like the M17X starts at $1,500. And for $1,500, you're getting, oh my goodness, don't you love it when the specs just completely turn to a white sheet of pixels? I'm going to assume that's my notebook and not the website. And not the website. But it's funny, right? So the entry level is like a Core i. No, hold on. Let me pull it up because there it is. So Alienware M17X entry level is $1,500. Running Windows 8, third generation Intel Core i7, the 3630QM. Windows 7 is standard. Windows 8 is optional. This is a 17.3-inch wide HD, 1600 by 900 screen. 6 gigabytes is standard at $1,500. A 500-gigabyte hard drive, a 2-gigabyte GDDR5 NVIDIA GeForce GTX 660M $1,879, you go up to 8 gigabytes of dual-channel DDR3, same processor, and a GDDR5, 80 AMD Radeon, AT7970M. Going up another price, you get to a GTX. You max out a GTX 680M.
And you're just looking at the specs on the Alienware.
On the Alienware website.
Page, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, $1,500 for an entry. For their entry level 17, it's like $1,500.
What's the GPU on that again? On the entry level one?
On the entry level one, it is.
That's the biggest determining factor here.
NVIDIA GeForce GTX 660M.
Okay, that's decent. The model numbers don't match up evenly with desktop parts. So the 660 is probably closer to the performance of a 650 on the desktop. So, you know what you're getting into. a 680 is actually more like a 660 Ti type of thing. And there's actually, I think there's a new one called the 680MX, which is like actually a 680.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, which is really impressive. So, I mean, you can go back and forth a lot on these.
Going to a smaller screen makes a huge deal because, like, if you drop down to the M14X, the Alienware, it starts at $1,000. You're looking at like 6 gigabytes of RAM and Intel Core i5. And I, by the way, wouldn't shy away from the Intel Core i5.
No.
Unless you're doing like multi-monitor gaming or some crazy stuff or video editing. It's kind of funny. So $1,000.
I really like these M14Xs.
It's a nice notebook.
They're nice looking machines and they're not enormous.
Yes. 17 inches sounds small until you're trying to physically carry it. And 18 inches doesn't sound that much bigger than 17 inches until you're carrying it.
Yeah.
But the $1,000 14-inch Alienware, you're looking at, 1 gigabyte GeForce GT650M.
GT650M. And that's
you get that basically a 1 gigabyte or a 2 gigabyte GeForce 650M with Optimus, but basically $1,000 a GT650M with 1 gigabyte, going up to $1,200 gets you the GT650M with 2 gigabytes of RAM.
The concern I would say about going with something like a 650 on a mobile is if you plan on connecting it to an external display, that GPU is not very powerful and it's going to show. Right, that's why I would say look for the 660 or above on the mobile side, or look for AMD's 7900 series or above on the mobile side. If you plan on connecting it to an external monitor, if you're going to play on a 14-inch screen, that's fine.
Right.
But if you want to play it on a 22-inch monitor at 1080p or even bigger, then you're going to want to make sure you have more gaming performance.
I would like all the performances
behind it, but it's as with laptops. You pay more for extra battery life, and you pay more for performance, and you want on the desktop, too.
Mars Worm. Ryan, 2 GTX 680s or 1 GTX Titan?
Yes.
Ryan, is it true that the GTX 690 is faster than the Titan? Okay, well, you know.
We can combine these.
Okay.
Yes and no. So 2 680s versus a Titan. The 680s are going to perform better.
Right.
But let's look at this. Let's look at this way. 690 versus Titan, because the 690 is a little bit slower than 2 680s. Right? They're a downclocked 680s.
And the 690 has less, basically has one pool of 2 gigabytes. Is it 2 gigabytes?
No, it's 2 gigs per GPU.
GPU.
It is essentially 2 680s
on one board.
On one board, but a little bit slower.
Okay.
Now, we compare that to the Titan. This is a little bit preview of the story that's going to go up on the website tomorrow. Because we compare Titan to a 690 directly. And the 690 is faster.
Uh-huh.
But there are cases where the Titan is significantly smoother. And that is because the Titan is one large GPU as opposed to two medium-sized GPUs, okay. I guess we'll say. So I think maybe what the rule will be is, okay, if you want a 690, if you want... I almost consider the 690 the best single monitor card, and Titan the best card if you plan on going to multi.
Okay.
Because as you go to the larger resolution, stutter becomes more of an issue. Frame buffer becomes an issue. Only 2 gigs per GPU on the 690, where you get 6 gigs on the Titan.
That's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. So, you know, if you're going to stay on one monitor, the 690 is probably fine, and you're going to get a little bit higher frame rates and not anywhere near as bad as stutter and frame variance as you get on the Crossfire configurations from AMD. If you think you might go to multi-GP or multi-display, you know, if you're going to spend $1,000, I'd buy the Titan because it will be a little bit lower performance, but it will be smooth all of the time. You don't have to worry about any multi-GPU scaling issues. And it has a huge frame buffer for multi-monitor gaming.
Which is good.
And if you're buying a $1,000 video card, I have a thought that you're probably going to buy multiple monitors eventually, too.
Well, we hope.
I mean, you're obviously willing to make the investment in hardware.
At the very least, if you're running a single 1080p monitor and you spend all the money on the Titan, please tell me sometime in the near future you're going to buy another monitor, 1080p monitor or three, or perhaps some WQHD monitors. Squirrel Decker, when will the NVIDIA 700 cards be out?
I don't know.
Yeah, they're not telling us. And if they are, it's under NDA.
If they told me, I can't tell you. I mean, maybe.
One of my favorite questions of all time. Tourist, Ryan, can you issue expert opinions on CUDA?
Not really. CUDA is...
CUDA's cool if your applications support it. Your applications can actually do meaningful work or do more meaningful work faster.
I wish it didn't exist.
Ooh.
I wish...
Whoa!
CUDA was around before OpenCL. CUDA opened the way.
I'm not
going to
issue an expert opinion, but I'm going to issue a strong opinion, Mr. Ryan Trout.
CUDA was around before GPU computing was a thing. And CUDA was a necessary evil at the time to get people to program for GPUs. NVIDIA created a programming language around it and said, we're going to give developers the tools to build this. All right? And there was great... there was good support for it. Not great support for it. There was good support for it. And the reason there wasn't great support for it is because it didn't work on AMD. CUDA doesn't run on AMD. CUDA doesn't run on Intel. CUDA doesn't run on anything but NVIDIA. And that's great for NVIDIA. It's not great for everybody else. OpenCL is very similar to CUDA in terms of implementation, and it does the same things. And if you have an OpenCL application, it could, in theory, run on a GeForce card and a Radeon card and an Intel integrated graphics processor graphics type technology. So I don't want to say that I don't wish it existed at all. I would say that I wish NVIDIA was putting more emphasis on converting that base into OpenCL. But there's no benefit to them. If there are people locked into the CUDA ecosystem, then they want to keep people in the CUDA ecosystem. Somebody in the chat room saying CUDA is an open language. Sure, I can learn it, but I can only run it on one specific piece of hardware. And that doesn't make it open.
Right.
So...
it may make it compelling for certain vendors.
There are some benefits of CUDA. I'm sure NVIDIA has some things in CUDA that they do a little bit better than you can do in OpenCL because it's their own and they kind of get the benefit of starting from the beginning. But, you know, take TressFX.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what it was written in? OpenCL. Because AMD was behind it.
Right.
Right. And you know what? TressFX runs on NVIDIA cards. It may not run as well as perfectly in this iteration, but it will run on an NVIDIA card.
Funny how that
Guess
works.
Guess what? PhysX does not run on AMD cards. It's from NVIDIA. And NVIDIA showed demos at GTC of these really cool facial animations and really cool water animations, all CUDA'd in CODA. Will never run on AMD products. And that sucks. It does. I mean, I've had that stance since the beginning with PhysX.
I'm not fighting you. I'm just laughing. One last one before we go in a completely different direction. Visual Menace. Is there any cheap Thunderbolt devices that I could use to daisy chain a Thunderbolt display and a cinema display? Blah, blah, blah.
So he just wants two monitors and he wants some dummy device to sit between them so that he can daisy chain them?
Yeah, short answer is there are no cheap Thunderbolt devices.
especially not cheap ones that have pass-through.
Yeah, and that's the big deal, right? Because Thunderbolt's really cool because you can actually... You know, you can have your Thunderbolt monitor, you can have your Thunderbolt drives, and essentially the video the video is for all intents and purposes carried. And let me completely abuse my understanding of the situation. Basically, say the video bandwidth does not impact, say, file transfer speeds, right? Because it's essentially carried in a different part of the cable. Horrible way of describing it. I apologize in advance. But there are so few Thunderbolt devices out, because I'm looking at like MacSales.com, OWC, Otherworld Computing. Love that website. It is awesome if you are a Mac owner. But it's kind of like funny. You're still looking at, okay, so wait, they now have a half meter Thunderbolt cable for $30. That's good. That means Thunderbolt cables are now under $50. Yeah. 2 meter cables, $44. Let's go. Sonnet Echo Express Card, 34 Thunderbolt adapter. So you have an Express Card adapter. That's not really going to help you out. A 500 gigabyte Buffalo mini station Thunderbolts and USB 3.0 bus powered portable storage solution, $154, discounted from $300. And I'm pretty sure it does not offer. Oh, wait, is it daisy chainable? I'm having this moment where my something has seized the CPU.
Beach ball.
Mad beach ball, dude. So where Thunderbolt? Hold on. Oh, yeah, I don't. No, that's no daisy chaining. Nope, daisy chaining on that.
You know the only device I have that has a daisy chain on it is the Pegasus R4, and that's like a $1,300 RAID array. So not ideal. Don't do that.
Is there any monitor with built-in daisy chaining ability?
Sure, the Thunderbolt. I think the Thunderbolt display. Is that what he's using?
Apple
Thunderbolt display?
Okay.
If he's using that, then it has pass-through on it.
Ah.
Because that's how I did our initial testing, I think.
Yeah. Daisy chain a Thunderbolt. Oh, he's got a Thunderbolt display and a Cinema display.
So well, he should be able to do that. He should be able to connect the Cinema display to the pass-through of the Thunderbolt display, right?
That would sound right.
I mean, there's unless a Thunderbolt display sitting over there. I could go check.
Maybe it's an older Cinema display that doesn't support Thunderbolt.
But see, the last monitor only has to support Mini DisplayPort. It doesn't have to do Thunderbolt.
There you
have
it.
Only the pass-through devices have to have Thunderbolt.
So Mac, Thunderbolt to Thunderbolt display to Cinema display.
Yeah, I think that'd work. I don't know if somebody in the chat room can tell me, but I'm Thunderbolt display has to have pass-through on it. That is their thing, right? If they don't have that, they screwed something up. So.
There you have it.
Last comment. Somebody, Scott, who's picking on me in the chat, said that NVIDIA had opened up CUDA recently. And
AMD or Intel will never implement it, but NVIDIA, in the glory of its open, loving heart.
Since the beginning, CUDA has been open in that we'll let anybody else write a compiler for CUDA for their hardware. Go for it. But don't come to us for support. But we invented it all. It's not a good situation.
If you'd like to take advantage of our language and develop all the tools to use it on your processors, by all means, NVIDIA gives you this open opportunity.
It's not worth getting into that battle again, I guess, but there's just two different companies, there's two different stances. Look at what we talked about with the Sky versus Grid. Look at TressFX versus physics, look at CUDA versus OpenCL. There are differences, and there are positives and negatives.
This is a lot like the pissing contest that's running between Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and everywhere else. And it's frustrating, and it doesn't help the end user, and it doesn't help advance the market, but it's part of the corporate strategery.
Last point. Monoprice 27-inch monitors are in stock.
They were back out of stock by yesterday. But
they had 160 of them in stock when they emailed me.
Yeah.
So they sold a lot of them.
And they were gone by yesterday afternoon.
I hope I get some credit for that.
I think it was awesome. They still have, as of this morning, they still had the 30-inch monitors in stock.
Those are like six something though, right?
Those are like 700 and 800. Oh,
okay. The 27s were 380.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. With a warranty.
It's in our price range.
Yeah. I literally had it in the cart and I was like, hovering, I was like, I have enough monitors.
You should have bought it.
I have so many monitors, though. You have no idea. I bet I've got 8 30-inch monitors.
Why don't
in my
you
office.
Send me a couple of your 30-inch monitors, and you can buy a new 30-inch monitor. I'll give you $100 for that. One of those.
He's bidding down. That's the wrong way.
No, actually, it's the right way for him.
Yeah, well, all right.
He's advanced. Ladies and gentlemen, that's about it for this episode of Twitch. More GPU reporting next week?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I'm doing forever from now on, I guess. Tomorrow we'll have, by the time this is up, we'll have the Titan versus 690 versus 7990 / emulating 7970s in Crossfire. And then every other day after that, we'll have another set of data. So 7950 versus 660 Ti, 7870 versus 660, 7850 versus 650 Ti boost or something like that. The graphs are already made. I just got to write.
It all bleeds together it after does, a while.
Trust me.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay.
There are worse things to do. You know, I could be shoveling manure someplace.
Oh, I've shoveled manure.
Well, see, I don't want to.
It could.
So
shovel benchmarks instead.
What about you?
Techzilla. Wow. We've got wireless networked hard drives coming in. We've got some of the really cool Wi-Fi enabled hard drive docks or hard drive devices. Those are actually really cool. One from Seagate, one from another brand to be named later. We just did, I got to review the HD audio or the high resolution audio, the 24-bit 192K portable player. That was really exciting. That came up on this week on Twitch. We've got information. Basically, we have pretty much all of Samsung's new HD TVs coming in.
Wow.
So one by one, they're going to be coming in for review, and hopefully LG, Sony, and Vizio. So Robert's going to be busy in the testing lab getting this HDTV on. What else did we talk about this week? Home theater PCs, and because we always talk about home theater PCs.
It's a regular topic for us,
too. It's a regular
topic.
Yeah. It's funny how that works. They just never go away. And actually, the whole set-top box scene. We're actually going to have the expansion pack for the Samsung HD TVs, the one that basically takes last year's. You can pull the blister off of last year's plug this blister onto last year's.
Yeah, that's better than not.
They are trying. That is better than not.
Well, in theory, you can tell me later.
Yeah, we'll tell you about that next week. I'm at a loss for words, and there'll be viewer questions and Veronica and Robert and spring break and mayhem and probably something involving cleaning peanut butter out of HDMI cables.
Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ryan Shrout, at Patrick Norton, the other guy at the table.
And that's about it for this episode of Twitch. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch. Welcome to a special Cinema Verite version of Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, wow. And suddenly it was MTV Beach House, 1994. Oh, my goodness, in the MTV Beach House, we've got a LAN party going. Ryan Shrout's here with the fat graphics cards. Oh, my goodness, can we make these systems sing? Yes, we can, right after this message from one of our wonderful sponsors.
I don't know if that's going to be used against me. I'm not very much in the future.
Are you planning on running for office? No. Then you should be fine. Woo!